IoT device makers really need to start thinking about how to implement security for their devices much more than as they're currently just getting devices to market quickly and focus on features instead of security.
On this episode of Embedded Insiders, Associate Editor Chad Cox and Director of Product Marketing at Intrinsic ID, Vincent van der Leest, discuss the company's recent achievement of successfully protecting 500 million connected devices worldwide with their SRAM Physical Unclonable Function technology, also known as PUF. Next, on Dev Talk with Rich and Vin, the two are discussing different types of battery technologies, as well as some tips for retaining the battery capacity of consumer devices, like the rate at which you should charge your consumer devices, how to optimize high-speed charging solutions, and more. But first, the insiders are celebrating the life of entrepreneur, engineer, and co-founder and former chairman of Intel Corporation, Gordon Moore. They're also discussing Rich's recent trip to the John Deere Technology Summit, where the company showcased their next-generation farming technology.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the latest adventures of the Embedded Insiders. I'm Rich Nass, Executive Vice President of Open Systems Media, and I'm here with Brandon Lewis, the Editor-in-Chief of Embedded Computer Design. How you doing, Brandon?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing pretty adventure. Good.
How's your adventures going?
It's going. It's that time when travel is really busy and you know, your job doesn't go away when you're on the road and just trying to get everything done. But nobody cares, so I'm just going to keep plugging away here until I get my job done.
I was going to say, cry me a river.
Exactly. That's why I didn't, because I know you don't care. No, that's not true. I know you care. You care deeply. Anyway, sad news last week, the passing of Gordon Moore. I think he was 95 years old. Not that that makes it any better, but there's a few people, probably you can count them on one hand, who you could say were like the people who started our industry. And he's definitely on that list. You know, that group that started Fairchild that evolved into some of the other companies, and Intel obviously being one of them. Everybody knows Gordon Moore for his famous quote about the transistor count doubling every 18 months, but he was so much more than that. And he was a guy who was a gentleman. I had the pleasure of speaking with him a couple of times, and he was always as nice as could be.
Yeah, I mean, when you said sad news, you know, it's one of those things where maybe celebration of life is in order. Mr. Moore changed, one of few people who helped change the course of history. You know, I mean, Intel has been around for 55 years now, and without a doubt have changed the way that everyone in the world lives. You know, every person in the world has been touched by the semiconductor industry that really he was instrumental in building. So he'll be missed and the industry could use more Gordon Moores.
Yep. You know, you put him on the same pedestal with Bob Noyce and Jack Kilby, people who, as you say, they really changed the world that we live in.
Yeah. And actually, at the Synopsys event that I was at a couple of weeks ago now, you know, Artigias, the CEO of Synopsys, so in a sort of tribute to Gordon Moore, was talking about this concept of SysMoore, it's spelled M-O-O-R-E, which is the continuation. You know, Moore's law is slowing down. There's really no disputing that at this point. You know, nobody denies that fact. However, this concept of SysMoore is the continuation of this principle just at the system level, right? Which is a logical evolution and probably a more practical evolution to at least, you know, our listeners and, you know, the engineering community, because we don't care about what the processor does, you know, in a vacuum, right? We care about the performance of the system overall. So, you know, the legacy lives on.
You know, but we've been butting up against the limits of Moore's law, and I'm doing air quotes, for like 20 years. And the manufacturing process just improves and improves and improves, and we haven't hit the limit yet. As you said, you know, eventually we're gonna hit that limit, but it hasn't happened yet.
I know, it's really crazy when you're going sub nanometer, right? I
mean, yeah.
People are literally working on sub nanometer transistors right now. It's mind boggling.
You know, while we keep saying it's all about the software, I guess it is, but if you don't have the right hardware to run it on, you're not going to get too far.
Yeah, the software guys are always quick to say that the processors and the rest of the hardware is a paperweight without the software. But it'd be funny to see what the response is to what the software is without the hardware.
Yep, absolutely.
Very good. Well, speaking of things that semiconductors have touched that you probably wouldn't have guessed it back in the 60s when Intel was founded, you were at a John Deere event, weren't you?
I was at a John Deere event, and it was actually really eye-opening to see the technology that's in this company. It was very clear to me that they're a technology company that just happens to sell tractors, and it's not the other way around, not even close. They have as much leading-edge technology in artificial intelligence, machine learning, EV technology, machine vision, all that stuff, as any other OEM that's out there. We started out with a day in the classroom where they talked about a lot of these things. And then the next day, they took us to a farm, a real working farm, where all their equipment was there. They put us in some of these tractors with autonomous drive and showed us the things they could do. One example they had, which was pretty mind-boggling, they had a farmer there. And, you know, I think of a farmer as a guy wearing overalls and a straw hat. But this guy, he owned a farm that had 5,500 acres. And that's huge as far as farms go. And he tended to that farm with two other people. It was him, his dad, and one employee. And they did everything, for the most part, that it took to care for this farm. The tilling, the seeding, the spraying, the fertilizing, the harvesting, all with three people. And a lot of it is just the machines driving themselves. He made some joke about while he was supposed to be tilling. Well, while he was tilling, he was attending his daughter's soccer game while the machine was running up and down the field autonomously. Crazy stuff, but just a blast to see.
Yeah, you know, I know that a lot of John Deere's compute that they're using on board is actually provided by NVIDIA. But continuing on this Gordon Moore philosophy and what you said about them not being a tractor, you know, tractor OEM, them being a technology company. I mean, when you think about end industries and end applications use cases, you know, it's like a tractor. I mean, how much better can a tractor, can you make tractor models themselves? Yeah, just in a vacuum, right? It's like, how much better can a car become now than it was 10, 15 years ago? You know, there have been really smart people working on these problems for a long, long time. Where you're going to get innovation and change is by becoming a technology company. And we've seen this happen across industries. Airbnb, Lyft, Uber, you know, all of these industries are completely disrupted by technology. And you know, John Deere and agriculture is just another on the list, right?
Yeah, they've implemented technology that does the paradigm shift by taking the farmer out of the tractor and putting him in an office and doing the same job far more efficiently. And it isn't any different from any other technology. It's just that I think we have in our heads that farming is old and is never going to change. And that certainly couldn't be any further from the truth.
Yeah, and I think it's also interesting that the reality is here, despite, you know, we haven't spent a whole lot of time talking about ChatGPT, which we probably should, but the reality is here that in these end use cases, in these end markets, really what's going to give companies an advantage pretty soon is data and being able to analyze data, which means that you're, number one, going to have the infrastructure in place via electronics components. And number two, you're going to need to have people who are able to interpret the type of data that is of interest to your use case, but then do something effective with it through AI or through big data analysis or through data science. I really think that in the next 5, 10, 15 years, your standard farmer is going to be, you know, have a background with data, have a background with electronics, and know how to do these things. Because to your point, I mean, in a three-person operation over 5,500 acres, you better know how to program that, how to you know, update the ROM, update the memory on your tractor, just in case something goes wrong, right?
Well, that was a really good point. When you are a farmer, your window of opportunity is really small. If you're in a manufacturing facility, right, and your manufacturing line goes down for a day, you've lost one of 365 days. But the window for a farmer, and as I learned this week, is generally about 14 days. And if you lose one of those 14 days, you're screwed. It's almost impossible to make that back up. So they were talking about a lot of remote diagnosis and remotely fixing things. So John Deere doesn't even have to send a repairman out in a lot of cases. And predictive maintenance was a big part of that, where they have sensors on all the equipment. So the example they used was they found out that somebody's oil pump was on its way out, and they were able to figure that out before it actually died. And they showed up at the guy's farm with a new oil pump, and he was like, "What are you doing here?" And they said, "Well, we have to replace your oil pump." And he said, "Why?" They said, "Well, because yours is going to die." And it was about an hour to swap out the new one. And if he had to wait if he had waited till it died, he might have lost at least a full day.
Right. And I mean, there you go. So that's the, right there is the legacy in action, right?
Full stop.
Now, Director of Product Marketing at Intrinsic ID, Vincent Vanderleest, provides insight into the widespread use of the company's SRAM physical unclonable function security technology that's being used in industries from consumer IoT to safety critical.
PUF stands for physical unclonable function. It's actually like a digital fingerprint for a chip. You can compare it to human biometrics, but in this case, like I said, for chips. And that is because every individual chip is unique. Even if you make hundreds of millions of chips that are all functionally the same, if you know where to look, you'll see that every individual chip is unique. And at Intrinsic ID, we discovered a way to uniquely identify each individual chip. The technology that we use is called SRAM PUF, and it's based on the startup behavior of SRAM memory. SRAM is a volatile memory, so when you power it down, it will lose all of its content. And when you power it back up again, an SRAM memory fills itself with a random pattern of zeros and ones. Turns out that this random pattern is actually pretty stable when you power up the same chip over and over again, and it's completely different between two individual chips. And what we've done at Intrinsic ID is we've developed the algorithms that turn this slightly noisy fingerprint in this SRAM memory into a fully stable and fully random cryptographic root key for the device. This key is the root secret for that particular device, and it's the basis for the root of trust. This key is never stored, and when the device is powered down, the key is actually gone, because everything is based on this volatile SRAM memory. Then we can derive additional keys from this first root secret. And these additional keys can then be used to uniquely identify and authenticate devices, but also to protect data from eavesdropping and reverse engineering. And it can even help preserve privacy of the users of devices. So this way at Intrinsic ID, we provide security solutions for the connected world. And it's now being used in more than 500 million connected devices. So you can find our technology actually basically from your wrist all the way up into space, with a lot of things in between like laptops and data centers and so on. So yeah, we're really happy with the very rapidly growing adoption rate of our technology right now.
So with everything else that's out there, why is this PUF technology, why is it going into like up into space? Why is it being trusted?
What we have to offer is the best combination of security, flexibility, and cost. SRAM PUFs, they don't need keys to be provisioned externally into the device. So that means that if you go to the factory flow in the supply chain, then you don't need anyone to trust with all your secret keys, simply because the keys, they come from within the devices themselves. That adds to the security. And also, like I said, the keys are never stored. So that means that when you use SRAM PUF technology, there's never any sensitive data in non-volatile memory. That means that all the sensitive data that you have on your device, it could also be additional keys, or it could be sensitive IP or whatever, you can encrypt this with the keys that are derived from the PUF. And when you power down the device, because all of the PUF keys are gone, what you're left with is non-volatile memory with encrypted data without any keys. So this way, no one can ever get to the data. No one can ever copy the data or copy the keys from one device to the next. So this very much increases the level of security for the device. And it does so even up to a level that, for example, US government and defense contractors are using this because it's completely certified for US government and defense use. So that's very high security on one side. Then I also mentioned flexibility. Because the SRAM PUFs don't require any key provisioning or secure storage, that also adds to the flexibility, not just the security. This is because you don't need any trusted facilities to do the key provisioning for you. So when you make your choices in your supply chain, you have a lot more flexibility of vendors that you can work with. Also, because you don't need any additional secure key storage, you don't have to add any additional components, which add additional complexity to your device, like secure elements or TPMs. And everything that we do is done with standard off-the-shelf components in a standard supply chain. So that gives very high flexibility for our customers. And finally, the aspect of cost. This also comes down to some of the items I already mentioned. So for example, no added security components are required with our technology. So that means you can create a device without a TPM or without a secure element, which means that you simply have one less chip in your device. And especially in IoT related industries, this of course is very important to keep the cost of the high volume devices low. Also the provisioning, because it doesn't have to happen in the supply chain, because it comes from within the device, this eliminates a lot of cost in the supply chain as well.
How is Intrinsic ID helping the IoT makers get ready? I think you said the legislation for US and EU is going to be hitting in 2024, and you guys are helping out in that aspect?
Yeah, that's correct. That's correct. Indeed, both the US and the EU have enacted a Cybersecurity Act in last year, in 2022. And now they're ramping up towards 2024, where this act should actually become a law. And that means that through these new initiatives from those governments, device makers will become liable if security for their devices is not sufficient. And of course, if we look at the geopolitical situation, especially in the semiconductor industry right now, it's very likely that there's more legislation that will follow. So that means that IoT device makers really need to start getting their act together and need to start thinking about how to implement security for their devices much more than as they're currently just getting devices to market quickly and focus on features instead of security. So this is going to become very important. And we believe that one of the key elements of this whole legislation will be certification. So what we do for our customers is we make sure that with our technology, they can get their products certified. One of the leading entities in the drive for legislation in the US is NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology. So they have their own standards and they will be leading this IoT security initiative. So we make sure that all of our products are either already NIST certified through our IP, or you can have your final product NIST certified. And the kind of certification you should think of is NIST CAVP, but also NIST SP 800-90 A and B for random numbers. of course, we also look at other standards. So FIPS 140-3 is one of them. Like I mentioned before, government and defense certification is something that you can achieve with our products. This is not necessarily needed for IoT devices, of course, but it does show how far you can go with certifying your device when you use our technology. Devices that use our technology have been certified also by other standards like EMVCO for payment, common criteria up to a level of AEL 6+, but also PSA and IOXT, two standards for IoT devices specifically.
So how does Intrinsic's PUF technology enhance, innovate security within the critical infrastructures?
Yeah, well, what we're doing is we're now starting to also deploy our solutions in the industrial IoT and critical infrastructures market. And we feel that this is very important because this market has an increasing need for higher security. There's a growing number of connected devices in smart factories and in critical infrastructures. And when these factories or infrastructures get hacked, the impact is enormous. I mean, you've seen it with the Colonial Pipeline hack in the US. And so what we've done is we've recently launched a new product, which is called Zyne. And this is an embedded software security solution. What that means is that it enables device makers to create a unique identity and a hardware-based security anchor on any device. Zyne also enables the creation of strong cryptographic keys and random numbers, and it allows every IoT device to encrypt its data and secure its communications. What is very important to realize here is that Zyne is the only software implementation of a PUF in the world. And the reason why this is possible is because we, as I explained earlier, we use the starter behavior of SRAM as the source of the PUF. And SRAM is available on pretty much any device.
Right.
So we can do this in software because we can get the SRAM fingerprint from an existing device, run our algorithms in software on that device, and then create the cryptographic root keys that we need and all the other cryptographic keys on the device without ever needing those keys to be exported or published somewhere. So everything stays within the device and it's all based on software. This is very important because, like I said, it provides an anchor in the hardware. Because when you would copy the software of the device to a counterfeit device or to a malicious device, it wouldn't work because you cannot copy along the keys from the PUF. So this way, you can actually make sure that anything that runs on a legitimate device stays on the legitimate device. Of course, we combine this SRAM PUF within Zyne with all the NIST certified cryptographic algorithms according to the standards that I mentioned before. And this includes algorithms for AES, for hash, for MAC, but also public key cryptography based on elliptic curves, and even PKI elements for generating and signing certificates on these devices. It's very important to know that Zyne gives you an additional level of flexibility here because it can even be installed on later in the supply chain or even retrofitted on devices that are already deployed in the field. You don't need to make any hardware changes to your device. Everything is regardless of the hardware that you're using. It's simply a matter of using our embedded software and then really provide security to all your connected devices in those smart factories or critical infrastructures.
Is there any specific use cases that you can speak of right now dealing with either US or EU critical infrastructure that is currently using Intrinsic's product?
Indeed, we have some first customers in critical infrastructures. This is mostly focused on networking side of things. So that means enhancing the security of routers and those kind of things within those critical infrastructures. A very nice example here is that these were existing routers and they got new requirements from their customers that needed to basically make sure that the devices reached a higher level of security. And they could decide, okay, are we going to design new devices for this? Or are we going to find a way to enhance the security with our existing hardware. And these customers who unfortunately I cannot mention because it's under NDA, but they realized that with our solution, they could actually enhance the security level of their product without making any changes. And just by adding a little bit of our software. And I think this is a very nice example of how, especially with the upcoming legislations and with everything moving towards increased security, we really can add a lot of value for our customers by giving them flexible, low-cost, high-security solution.
Finally, Rich and Vin discuss some of the problems with today's batteries and fast charging technologies and how to make the best of your battery-powered devices.
Welcome back to Dev Talk with Rich and Vin. I am Rich Ness. I am with Open Systems Media, and you are?
Vin D'Agostino.
And your claim to fame is?
I've done a lot of stuff in my life.
I thought you could say you're just an all-around good guy.
I'm an all-around good guy. Some people say that.
You're an all-around good guy. I'll vouch for you if I have to.
All right, cool.
Okay, so I want to talk about something that I find very interesting. I was at the APEC show not too long ago. It's where people come to talk about power technologies. And the whole silicon carbide and GaN thing was happening, reared its ugly head again, which I will talk to on a different podcast that I do with Brandon Lewis about how this is back. But one of the things the GaN guys were talking about was that they want to be able to charge your device. It wasn't exclusive to cell phones, but that was a big discussion because of the volumes, how quickly they can charge your phone. Where in the old days, to go from 10% to 100% was 3 hours is pretty much the norm. They say they can do it in 19 minutes. And I won't name the vendor, but they actually had a demo where if you're willing to give them 19 minutes, they would show you that they could bring it from zero to 100 in 19 minutes. Sounds great. However, if you do this over and over and over again, a lot of people charge their phones every day. I don't, but a lot of people are charging their phones literally every night. You know, the Apple Watches, you know, are one that's notorious for having to charge every day. Over 100 cycles, 200 cycles, 500 cycles, what happens to the battery? So I posed this to the vendor, and unfortunately, we're not on video because the response I got was where he just shrugged his shoulders and said, I don't know, as if it wasn't his problem. Well, maybe it's not his problem, but in a couple of years, when we find out that maybe this isn't so good for our batteries, it'll come back to bite these people. So I know you know a lot about batteries, and you might even want to tell that that's how you and I met talking about batteries. But what do you think, Vin?
Yeah, you and I met when you were working for a different publication company, and you were running the Portable Power show, and I spoke
Portable Design show. Back
Portable
in the
Design,
day.
Yeah. Yeah, and I spoke at some of your shows on batteries because I had been speaking at some other ones, and you and I found out that
you were pretty charged about that.
Yeah. And you and I found out we went to rival universities, Stevens and Nidget, which they don't call Nidget anymore, by the way. I said that to somebody who was there.
Really did that. That was an outsider thing. It's NJIT.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Yeah, so we've been talking about this for years, and it's been interesting to watch it because when we were first talking about this, it was all about cell phones and computers, and then as electric vehicles came up, suddenly so much of the buzz about batteries is moved to EVs and away from all these other things, and there's these small pockets of people still talking about phones and computers and other devices, medical instrumentation, but it's not really what it was. You know, when I worked at Anton Bauer, which is a big battery company, and started a lot of the smart battery work in the industry, we had done a smart battery for Baxter Healthcare for the LVAS, which is the left ventricular system. It's a pump to keep your heart pumping while you're waiting for transplant. It's a bridge to transplant. And we had lots of discussions about how quickly it needed to charge and how many extra batteries people needed, because one of the things you wanted to charge it quickly, but you didn't want to significantly change the capacity of the battery over time, because people would get into a rhythm. And then suddenly when they were going to wait till 3 PM, their battery would be dying at 1, right? So this is a very critical thing in something like a medical device, of course.
Yep.
The whole there's no free lunch kind of comes into play here. there are things that you can do to allow batteries to charge faster. Any battery can charge at what we call a C rate, which is the basically an hour to charge, an hour to discharge. That's the C rate of a battery. And that's not a problem. As you charge faster, the battery heats up more because you're pushing that current through the impedance of that battery, which most of it is a resistance. And that resistance gets turned into heat. Heat is one of the things that dries out the separators and causes some real problems in batteries to begin with. And in order to charge them faster and take that charge, the separators actually become slightly thicker, which means you're reducing the capacity of the battery to begin with. So the nameplate capacity of a battery in the same size for a fast charging cell is going to be lower than the nameplate capacity of a cell for a C rate or less charger. In some battery technologies, doing trickle charges are just as bad. You know, people talk about battery memory, and you and I know that it isn't about memory. You get these crystalline structures that grow that suddenly start. First of all, they have a lower charge potential, so they exhibit what looks like an end of charge signal in the charging process before the battery itself is charged. But if they grow large enough, they can pierce the separator and cause micro shorts in the battery, which also reduces the battery life because its self-discharge just sitting there on the shelf increases. So, you know, you don't want to charge it too slow. You also don't want to charge it too quickly. The number of cycles will go down. The capacity goes down. I don't know if you've taken a look at Windows 11, and it may have even happened in 10, but I just happened to notice it in 11. The normal charge for your battery is 70 to 80%. When you're sitting on the charger, it doesn't charge to 100% every time because a lot of people now, you know, people used to buy notebooks as a second computer and they had a desktop and they would only charge the notebook when they were going to use it. Now it's become everyone's main machine and they plug into a docking station or they plug into the wall and it's plugged in all the time. Mm-hmm. And constantly topping out to 100% and doing that cycle is also detrimental to the battery. And so you can get it to 100%. If you say, hey, I need my full capacity of my computer for this cycle, it'll charge it up. It'll let you know when it's done and you can go take it on the road for the day. But if you're someone who takes it on the road and fully charges and fully discharges every day, that is probably the best way to treat a battery if you're doing it at the right speed. And these high speed charging devices aren't breaking the laws of physics, right? It's all going to still be the same. As new battery technologies come out, we may find one that can accept a charge much more quickly. You know, there's differences between NiCad and nickel metal hydride and lithium ion and even lithium polymer. So all of those have different charge regimes and can have different speeds, but there's no holy grail in this yet.
So the bottom line is speed kills.
Speed can kill. Now, I'm not saying get rid of all your fast chargers. There's a place for them when you are in a rush. But if you fast charge your system once a month, once a week, even, you know, two or three times a year when you're really stuck, okay, that's fine. Go ahead and do that. But if you're doing it every time, every day, you're going to reduce your capacity. I have a old Surface Pro, which I have a new one that just came in and I'm setting it up. It had 3.5 hours of battery life when I first bought it. It's under an hour now. I can't take a flight without plugging in. And that's one of the things that pushed me into the new computer. So it's just repeated cycles. Now it's 3.5 years old, cycled every day, uses my main machine, and it gets pretty warm. So I can understand it and I'm okay with it. It doesn't owe me anything after 3.5 years. But capacity does change over time. I mean, Even if you're treating it properly, you only have so many charge and discharge cycles on a battery.
Yep, very true. So I think my next podcast will be with one of those GAN guys to ask him the question, you know, are we doing a disservice to people, and see what they say.
I can't wait. I'll be listening.
Thanks for listening to this edition of Embedded Insiders. For more daily news, videos, and podcasts, visit our website at embeddedcomputing.com.